Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 371 for March 30th of 2017, Inside Honda's Fuel Cell Strategy. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. Mr. B, V, how you be?
I be doing great. How about yourself, John?
If I can talk, I'll be doing great on this show.
Yeah, you're going to need to talk on this show.
I know. Well, we got to let everybody know. Henry Payne is back in the house.
Hey, John. Gary, good to be with you.
Car critic with the Detroit News. Also political cartoonist. Yeah. The only one I know who has ever made that kind of transition in his career.
And race car driver. The last time we had him on the show, he had his car in the studio.
That's right.
Yeah, that was fun.
But we've got him back here today because we want to be talking about the Honda Clarity. And the reason we want to do that is we've got Steve Senner. He's the Vice President of Environmental Business Development Office at American Honda. Steve, great having you here.
Thanks for having me.
And you got the Clarity here.
Right there, in the flesh.
In the flesh. And you guys started leasing this in California, what, in December of 2016?
Right. We had some of our initial Clarity drivers from the previous generation car insisted that they get first crack at the new one when it came out. So we had a nice little homecoming and a ceremony, and we delivered six or seven cars at the same time, and everyone was very excited. Good way to kick it off.
So this is basically the second, I mean, you've had other fuel cell vehicles in the past, I think going back as far as 2003 that you've made available, but this is arguably the second generation of a car that is commercially available to people, in at least in California.
Yes, for sure. It's the third generation of a fuel cell car that we've leased to people. The predecessor to this, the FCX Clarity, was the first purpose-built fuel cell car built on an assembly line. And this one is an extension of that. It's a complete model change. Everything is new about this, and there's more story to that as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is also, Steve, part of a much larger initiative by Honda, right? I mean, the Clarity is not just a fuel cell vehicle anymore. It is now a badge that represents a plug-in electric vehicle and Honda's larger commitment to selling two-thirds of its vehicles electrified by 2030.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
I mean, this is sort of a new icon, really.
Yeah, we want to make it a pillar line for the brand, just like Civic is or Accord is. And there's three incarnations. There's the fuel cell vehicle, which is for what we think is the apex customer, the one that has to have the latest, greatest technology. We're going to have a battery version, which is for someone who's more or less a purist and doesn't want to have anything to do with petroleum. And the third is a plug-in hybrid, which is kind of a tweener in that people that want to get in the game but maybe don't live in an environment where there's hydrogen fueling yet or can't really commit to a battery entirely because their drive habits are different or their life is irregular.
So tell us about the features of this new Clarity and what you learned from the previous generation owners.
Yeah, we've worked very closely with them. In fact, one of the customers that we delivered the car to was the first fuel cell customer ever that ever leased the car. And we learned from him early on because the exhaust from a fuel cell is water. And the car was making a puddle in its garage, and his kids were complaining about the puddle in the garage. So we brought that information to the development team back then, and when the predecessor to this car was introduced, it didn't create puddles. It held the water and disposed of it underway. This one is an evolution from that in that it operates at a higher temperature, and it really doesn't create water. It creates steam. Mm-hmm. So it's just gone.
Talk about the car, too. This is a big car. This is the biggest passenger car, I believe, that Honda makes. And there's a reason why you went with five passengers.
Yes. What we heard from our customers, again, was they didn't want a four-passenger car. And previously, the way the car was designed, you only had room for the four passengers. You had a fuel cell stack that was interior to the passenger compartment. And we've really achieved this is a highly evolved car. The entire powertrain is under the front hood. So that's the power control unit, the fuel cell stack, and the electric motor. And all of that is about the size of a V6 engine. And what that means is there's all this room in the passenger compartment now, and we can have five passengers. But also it means that we've got the power plant down to the size and compactness that anything with a V6 could be a fuel cell car going forward, and that's a huge achievement.
So we could see an Odyssey minivan, a Ridgeline pickup, in theory. Okay.
And that's a big thing because it means that we can keep designing cars the way we're designing them and not having the pigeonhole part of the powertrain here and something else there.
Well, and keeping that thought on the V6, right now the package would fit in a V6 space. You're competing against Toyota's Mirai, Hyundai's Tucson, which are four-cylinder transverse,
isn't it? It's a Tucson fuel cell.
I think it's a Tucson. Okay. Yeah, and they do have those space issues. The Mirai still is a four-passenger car because do you feel like the package is going to continue to get smaller, so that you'll be able to put it into four-cylinder vehicles, or do you really need a car this size for both the drivetrain packaging and the interior space that passengers expect?
Well, I think for now the answer is this is the size. Mm-hmm. But the energy density of these devices is improving, and they're going to get smaller and smaller and more efficient as these things do. So you might see Civic-sized cars or even smaller cars in the future. But at this point, the goal was to get it all under the hood so that we'd have the freedom in the passenger compartment to give customers what they wanted.
Well, and that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of what eats up a lot of space, of course, is the tank itself, which has got to be cylindrical. And, in fact, you guys have gone with two tanks, a big one and a small one.
Right, and that's for range. So we have the large tanks across the rear axle where typically you put those, and even petrol tanks are place there because it's away from any interference. And we have a smaller tank that's under the back seat position, and that gives us extra volume so that we can achieve a 366-mile EPA range for the car.
And I did some math this morning just out of curiosity, and I looked at the V6 Accord, which has a 17.2-gallon fuel tank, mm-hmm. so it has a range of 430 miles. So you guys are really in the ballpark with that,
yep.
with this vehicle.
So absolutely.
It's not a compromise. I mean, this is, I think, one of the issues that people might think, that if you buy a fuel cell vehicle, you've got to compromise in some way.
But, and this is what's tough for any of these alternative drives, right? There's always, it's better than what? So you guys have a superb hybrid product, and actually I think most of the customers for this car are going to be coming out of hybrid fleets, whether they're Honda or Toyota mm-hmm. Folks. And if you're coming out of a Honda Accord hybrid, it has a range of 750 miles on a 15-gallon tank that costs you $50 to fill. This thing right now, I mean, you guys have a program where you're basically giving the fuel for free, but hydrogen fuel, comparable, is $90 a fill-up. So your the Honda Clarity's competition is the Honda Accord hybrid. That's tough competition.
Right, and some of it's a psychographic, but I want to address the fuel situation. The prices are coming down, and as scale in the fueling infrastructure develops and scale in the manufacturing of the fuel develops. So at this point, there are stations in Los Angeles that are charging just under $10 a kilogram, and it's a little more than five kilogram tank. So the price is much, much less. But it's about equivalent to the same cost per mile as a petrol car, not a hybrid, just a straight up petrol car. So we think we're getting in the hunt as far as that's concerned. But also, the Accord Hybrid's a wonderful car. And what's wrong with an Accord that gets 449 miles per gallon?
Mm-hmm. So, see, isn't this bad? They you know, are competing with themselves.
Yeah,
isn't
it? but it's a psychographic. It's a different customer. It's
so why does somebody want this car?
This is your alpha influencer. This is the person who's the first guy amongst all your friends to get an iPhone, right? The one that knows everything about cameras, the one with the best investment advice. So it's a psychographic. And there's other customers for the other two clarities that will be introduced later this year. There's someone who's a purist, and they're probably the battery buyer. And then again, there's someone who wants to get in the game but really can't make the sacrifices or commitment, and that's the plug-in hybrid buyer. So I would say anyone that's considering a Clarity or will consider a Clarity is at the extreme psychographic. An Accord hybrid buyer is someone who just doesn't want to deal with any kind of inconvenience or change, and they just want the benefit.
Mm-hmm. Right, and they're different. And they're different demographics.
Right, and there's different geographies also. To be honest, battery cars have challenges in colder weather. That's something that is a reality.
You don't have a problem with these, even in bitter cold weather. There's no problems with
them. Not to the same extent. There's no problems with them, and because you can refuel in 3 to 5 minutes, you know, with your petrol car, you don't have the same efficiency in very cold weather either. But you don't notice, because when you need gas, you need gas. And unless you're keeping track of the miles per gallon and the weather on every tank, you're never going to notice.
But there's always been this issue, though, with fuel cells that, you know, because they make water and because there's water in the stack, that there's a concern that, you know, you'll go out to your garage someday in Michigan in January.
And there'll be a big ice cube blowing out from
it. But you guys, even in March, maybe even June.
Well, that's the benefit of maybe being on your fifth generation car. Mm-hmm. So we've got air that evacuates the fuel cell stack to get the moisture out of that.
So it's not an issue.
The other thing I was getting at when talking about the size of the car is you have a decent trunk. Because when I've looked in other fuel cell cars in the past, I mean, there's no room back there. The tank takes up all the room. And that's another value, I think, that you got with going with a size.
Sure.
Like this.
And we learned that with hybrids, too. Some of the early hybrids, you compromise the trunk space. People want their trunk. And we did the best we could. I think there's about 11.8 cubic feet of trunk space. The tank is up over the axle, as I said before. It'll hold 3 golf bags and couple of runs to the big market. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty confident everyone will be happy with that.
Steve, we love driving the cars and crawling all over them. When I came back from driving this in California, the first questions I got from friends and neighbors was, how safe was the hydrogen? I mean, I think that's a big piece of your all's public relations here. To buyers with a tank, a hydrogen tank in the back, and all the baggage that hydrogen comes from the Hindenburg on down. How do you say to people you're safe if you get rear-ended by a Chevy Suburban?
Right. So first of all, let's settle a couple of things. It was the paint that burned on the Hindenburg. Okay,
but in the magnesium frame.
Yeah, exactly. But to be truthful. You're driving around in that Suburban, not to pick on Suburbans, they're fine cars. They're loaded up with petrol, and those actually have the same issue as well. This vehicle meets all the crash standards. We've also developed other countermeasures to make sure it's even safer, let's say, in design. So the fuel tank is fail-safe, so when it's safe to operate, the valve opens and the system's fueled. If there's a leak, there are sensors in the back of the car and under the hood that can detect hydrogen and will shut down the fuel system. And if there's a crash and an airbag is deployed, the fuel system is shut down. So the other thing on top of that is that hydrogen is the lightest molecule in the universe. So if it does get loose, it just goes straight up and it's gone. It's not all over the floor or all over your pants. So we're very confident that it's a very safe way to propel the car.
And in refueling it, I found it very similar to refueling a natural gas car.
Yep.
Similar nozzle, similar mm-hmm. filler. The advantage you guys have, obviously, is you're as opposed to natural gas, which really seems to have stalled as an alternative because it means going these days mostly to utilities to get your fuel. You guys are trying to bring it to service stations.
We learned a lot from consumers with our natural gas Civic. And what they didn't want to do is go to city utility yards and fill up next to dump trucks and garbage trucks. They want to go to a gas station with a convenience store. They want to buy a lottery ticket. They want to buy milk. They want to be comfortable. They want to have a bathroom for the kids. So we've been working very hard on the distribution side of the infrastructure to provide resources to companies who are creating hydrogen lanes in existing gas stations. And as a result, there's 26 stations, retail stations open in California. Right now, I think 16 in the south, 10 in the north. There's connector stations between them. And what we're finding is now everyone's starting to see that business opportunity. So even the petrol companies who have huge amounts of footprints with stations and site control, and they're looking to get in the game again too. So it's a bit of a ratcheting up where you have to create the demand for the fuel, put some cars in the market, have enough fueling to support that, put more cars in the market, more fueling, and so on. So we learned a lot about it.
Hey, we got to take a quick break right now because we got some people that support the show, and we got to let them get their message into this as well. So, Carmen, let's give a shout out to our friends at Bridgestone.
Bridgestone engineers are helping All-Pro receiver Larry Fitzgerald go long.
I don't need help going long.
Bridgestone's Dual-Rear Lenza Plus is our longest-lasting SUV and truck tire. It's engineered to go 80,000 miles.
Huh? It's over 14 million first downs.
Oh, dang. I love anything that goes long. Long hair, long passes, long careers.
Long division.
Long dogs.
We're going to do this for 80,000 miles? Or...
You can walk if you like.
I don't want to walk, Larry.
You don't have to.
Yes.
Long hugs, long weekends.
Okay, we're back talking about the Honda Clarity, fuel cells, hydrogen, with Steve Center from American Honda.
Thank you.
Steve, tell us about the design of this car. I mean, it looks somewhat futuristic. Was that deliberate?
Absolutely. People, again, we're talking about psychographics that are these early adopters. They want people to see that they're driving something unique. So we worked very hard to develop a car that was aesthetically pleasing, that was futuristic looking, but also there was function beyond just the form. So you might notice on the car there are vents in the front and on the side, and what those vents do is create air curtains to flood the wheel compartments with air to create less drag, mm-hmm. to increase the aerodynamics
now,
of the car.
The air curtains have been used on other, I think, the Ford F-150 pickup and the like uses them, but you've incorporated them into the rear door.
We're the first with, so there's a slot halfway through the rear door which runs straight back, and then there's also a bit of a skirt on the top of the fender. So when you're building a car like this, efficiency matters. We developed the car to slip through the air. Air goes over the car, goes under the car where it's smooth, and we're working on other areas where there's interference and chatter.
It's aerodynamic detail like we've never seen before in a car.
Yeah.
It also seems to me, though, that alternative fuel community is kind of getting their own iconic style style details. You have the cut rear fenders, which mm-hmm. we've seen on your Insight before. Right.
And explain that a little bit, Henry, because it's not a full wheel well. It's
yeah, that's a better description.
Somewhat covering a bit of the rear tire, again, for aero. Yeah.
It's not quite the fender skirt on your Hudson.
Hot rods.
Yeah. But it has function,
yeah.
And that's the purpose. So between the air curtain and the lower rear quarter panel, that achieves what we want.
Yeah.
So that's just part of the genre.
Yeah, it's a bit of a visual cue, I think, as to what you're driving, and also the double rear window.
Right.
Which
you have
see
a high
on
back.
Bolts, you see on Priuses, you see on this car.
Right. So for aerodynamics, you have a taller rear on the car, but you still need to be able to see over that, or in this case, through it. So there's a skylight over the back seat and through the trunk lid, which just helps you understand what's around you when you're driving.
And I think you guys pioneered that on the CRX way back in the day.
Yeah,
good memory.
Uh-huh. Way back.
Steve, as you mentioned, it's the early adopters who want this car, and they are going to want it no matter what. The availability is going to be very limited of this car. I think Honda's talked about maybe selling only 200 in Japan. Maybe it's a bit more here.
Much more. Thousands.
Thousands here.
Thousands in the U.S.
But you've got the most killer lease of killer leases. It's like, what, $369 a month?
$369 a month.
Well, it gets
20,000 miles.
A year.
A year.
This is a 36?
36-month lease. A lot of folks that acquire these cars, especially in California, are long-distance runners. So we don't want them to worry about mileage. But the coup de grace is the fuel. And because the fueling infrastructure right now is maturing, there's a little bit of inconvenience, perhaps. The prices are adjusting. So what we wanted to do was not to have people worry about the pricing or translating kilograms to gallons and doing all of this high school, college math when they're filling up the car. So we're providing them with $15,000 worth of fuel, which ought to cover the whole
lease. Which is what? It's a credit card that they can
use. Yeah, it's a fuel card, and it's only good for hydrogen fuel. So,
yeah.
Okay, but wait, there's more. Keep talking. There's more to this lease yet.
Well, sometimes you may feel the need for a Vegas run or a trip out of the hydrogen zone. So we're offering 21 days of luxury car rental.
And you go to Avis, and you can rent a luxury car for
whatever
free.
Whatever luxury car they have that you want. And this way you're traveling in style on your weekend away or wherever you're going.
But wait, there's more.
How's that?
The $5,000 rebate from the state of California.
So California's got some money. The feds have money, too. The federal money's applied into the lease price, so that's already there. And that's a tax credit, so you have to pay taxes to get it. But we get it.
But you're leasing it, so you bake that into
right.
the lease.
So we get it, and we pass it on. And the state's offering $5,000 and a carpool lane sticker, which might be worth a lot more than $5,000 if you ask the right
person. And the $5,000 goes to whoever leases it.
That goes to the lessee.
You get a check from the state.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if you do the math, this is about as sweet a deal as sweet
I did the math, and I want to say it's a little over $270 a month with no fuel costs whatsoever. And why are you doing this? Like, you know the early adopters in California are going to be lined up to get this vehicle, and you guys are giving them a screaming deal.
Well, it's like the food court at the mall. You ever go through there, and there's a lady with a piece of chicken on a toothpick and say, try this? So we want everybody to try it, because the early adopters, you're right, they're predisposed. So that alpha influencer is online already, but we want the others to consider the car, because we want this to be a mainstream choice for consumers going forward.
You mentioned that someone can get a luxury car. I mean, one of the things that impressed me about this vehicle is the interior.
Luxury
car. I mean, it is a very nice interior. Mm-hmm. It's not sort of like, gee, we'll just use vinyl because it's cheaper. And I mean, you guys have executed very well on that.
These guys went completely to the extreme. And the design concept was a cool modern lounge. So when you look at the inside, it's very clean. The lines are clean. There isn't any clutter. There's a center stack screen, which also includes features such as our Honda sensing. So when you turn on the turn lane signal to the right, there's a camera on the mirror which films your blind spot, so you don't have to crank your head all the way around. So there's functionality in there. It's clean. It's roomy. It's spacious. It's roomier than an Accord inside. And the purpose was it should be luxurious. It's leading-edge technology. There shouldn't be a penalty.
But to that point, Steve, you guys have a luxury brand. We were doing the math. Mm-hmm. You'll love this, John. We're doing the math in the car. It's basically 150 a month for the California tax credit. You're saving about $200 in fuel a month. You're looking at a sub $100 lease when you get these things early. So I mean, you got journalists who are ready to go out and buy these things. Even poor
that
journalists.
Means it's a good deal.
but still. The raw number is 369.
Yeah.
I mean, that's accurate territory. I think the RDX is leasing for 400, 420 these days. So you're up in high-end, accurate territory with this. Why not make the Clarity an Acura? Why Honda?
That's a good question. I think mostly because of the global impact, and the position was to raise the Honda brand's environmental credential even further. So Acura is in its own space, and that's about precision-crafted performance, and the theming for Honda is clean, safe, and fun.
But does Acura get a piece of this? I mean, this would be good for that
brand. Who knows what happens in the future? It's V6 size.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the point of performance, now, I mean, we've all driven it, and certainly you've driven it more than once. I mean, it gets after it. I mean, you get on the accelerator and you have that. It's sport, like
sport mode.
Yeah, I mean, it's
tires squeak.
Although I will say, like many electric cars, great off the line or as soon as you tip into it, loses a little bit of oomph once you keep your foot in it a while. But I think that's the nature of electrics, too.
Well, they give you a steady, straight power curve. This car will top out about 5,000 RPM, which is electric RPM. It's not the same as an internal combustion engine. But it's steady, it's quiet, it's consistent. Yeah. And again, there's two modes. So push that sport mode, and you won't be saying that.
Okay.
But it is familiar if you've driven a Tesla Model S. I mean, it's a big sedan, but it goes right off the line. But I think the 0-60s are going to come in around the eight-second range, we're told.
And eight seconds is very acceptable.
That's okay. But could you guys, with a fuel cell, could you do what Tesla does with its Model S? Could you go for ludicrous times in the three-second range?
I guess it's just a matter of the brand. I mean, anything can be done. How much fuel do you want to use?
Honda's a pretty sporty brand.
Yeah. And how much efficiency do you want to lose? Right. And that's that space. I think it's a little bit disingenuous to have a environmental car that's guzzling down its own fuel, even if it's hydrogen.
have a separate NOx tank, you know, just inject it. When
So I mentioned Japan. We know it's being sold in California. Where else in the world will this car go?
Well, we are working with different groups in the Northeast to create fueling infrastructure there as well. California is a little easier, large geography, one government. The Northeast is a little more diverse in terms of geographies and governments. But we think there'll be a pretty healthy fueling infrastructure there within 2 years, and we're looking forward to that market opening up as well.
So this is in other countries?
Germany's been big on hydrogen, and I think we're focusing right now on the U.S. just because it's one market, it's easier to deal with. And this is the plan for the future. This isn't just a U.S. market car, and it isn't just a car for California.
Are you concerned, though, Steve? I mean, green governments are fickle bodies. I mean, we're seeing that in Europe now with diesel. Diesel was heavily favored by the regulators. Now they've decided they don't like them, and they're going to take the tax benefits away and whatnot, we presume. Are you afraid? Is there concern there with hydrogen? Because not all environmentalists like hydrogen. It takes an enormous amount of energy to separate hydrogen from water. There's a lot of criticism that's too carbon intense in itself. How do you see the future playing out?
It all depends on how you see it. If you look at where the energy comes from, if you consider things like wind or solar, of which we probably waste 99.99999% of the energy that we have and store it as hydrogen, then you don't have the same issues because the efficiency is less of an issue. So I think you have that aspect to it. Our plan going forward is environmental powertrains. And with Clarity, as we mentioned earlier, there's three incarnations. So we're ready for each market as they develop at their own rate, their own pace, and their own place.
You know, it's interesting that hydrogen actually is a gas that comes off of many chemical processes that now is just basically
thrown away, right. So you could capture it. Also, it stores very well. So if you have a lot of sunshine or a lot of wind and you're using that to hydrolyze water, let's say, the hydrogen, you store it in the tank, and 100 years later, it's still hydrogen and it's still there. So it can be stored as a gas. And I think you don't have that with batteries, for sure, because batteries...
Or even, gasoline or diesel fuel go bad over
here. Go stale, right. So we really think... there's a huge benefit to this. There's a lot of naysayers. Governments are in and out of it. We're in it for the long haul, and I think it's going to find its place, and eventually it's going to be a leading fuel.
Do you think hydrogen will be the end game as we're going forward in terms of these technologies?
I think so for a lot of different reasons. Batteries are important, but they have limitations as we sit here today, and I think... hydrogen is a fuel that can be made in many different ways. You can even make it from natural gas, and you can say, oh, that's not good. But if it's natural gas that is renewable, if it's methane from landfills or other things, that's not creating any new carbon. The whole point is not to add carbon to the chain.
When it produces water, which Californians need to water their lawn.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and we have a feature in Japan, in the Japan market, with a power exporter that we make, where this will output electricity. And for those of you that have frequent power issues at your home, you can potentially use a car like this to power your home, and you can run it inside with the garage door down, because A, it won't make a puddle, and B, it won't make carbon monoxide. So,
that could have used that in Detroit a couple of weeks ago in that big power outage, the biggest we've had in DTE's history.
Absolutely.
Hey, look, we got to take another quick break. Where you've got Dr. Data coming out right after that, but we still got plenty more to talk about hydrogen, fuel cells, and the Honda Clarity. So, Carmen, let's take that quick break right now.
This is 37 Seconds in the Autoline Garage. Here are some secrets of the second generation Honda Ridgeline. Take the tailgate, for instance. Most of its competitors are pretty straightforward, but the Ridgeline opens both ways. They say it's dual action. Then, giving a quick look at the bed of the truck, you see, well, you don't see anything, unless you know where to find the secret in-bed trunk, where you can put everything from luggage to your favorite tailgate beverages. And speaking of tailgating, this truck is ready for any kind of party with its own in-bed audio system that you can control from inside the truck. But of course, the biggest Ridgeline secret is the way this truck drives, quiet and smooth. This has been 37 Seconds in the Autoline Garage.
And of course, what you just heard is some of the things that we're trying out right now of doing very quick car reviews, only 37 seconds. In fact, if you look in another few days or so, you're going to see a 37-second car review of the Honda Clarity, because I just finished writing that one. But anyway, it's that part of the show. It's time for Dr. Data.
All right. So I didn't realize how topical this was going to be when I came up with this number, okay? So, Henry, you may get it right like that. But and Steve, you may want to chime in and guess what this number may be. So, Carmen, please bring up the first number. Okay, so 106,000 cars, 22,000 vans and trucks, 2019. What could be happening then?
I'll take a guess.
All right.
That'll be the cumulative number of fuel cell cars and vans and trucks on the road.
All right, Henry, now I want you to guess.
I'll say electrics.
Electrics, okay. None of the above. Yeah. And it's a topic we talked about, but nobody's going to guess this. You want to take a shot at it?
I couldn't.
All right, so, Carmen, bring up the answer. So, Barcelona is going to have the most severe law trying to ban diesel. Henry, I know that's going to break your heart.
You love diesels.
I love diesel. I know. And so basically, we're seeing a number of European countries.
They're forcing the older ones out.
They're forcing the older ones out because of levels of pollution. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at what's going on in London, in Paris, and so Barcelona will be the largest municipality anywhere on the planet that is going to restrict those vehicles and completely.
Fickle governments. Diesel was all they wanted 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So 10 years ago.
Yeah. How quickly the winds change.
Yeah. In their defense, though, those are the older ones.
Right.
And things have improved since then. So I think it's just like California, where they have a scrappage program where if your car fails the smog exam, they'll buy it from you, because they don't want you fixing it and they don't want it back out there. Or if it's older than a certain year and it passes, they'll give you $500 for it just to get it off the road.
Yeah. So, let's hope Silicon Valley keeps printing money out there.
Yeah,
$5,000 tax credit here, $500 salvage there.
Yeah, and that's from an entity that doesn't create its own money supply,
right.
Like a federal government.
Yeah.
So, you have to deal with all manner of environmental issues in addition to hydrogen, in addition to hybrids. So what are the challenges that you face in doing your job?
Well, there's the business challenge. So I'll give you an interesting example. So one of the responsibilities that my group has is to reduce the carbon footprint for the company. One is the products that we make, which is the bigger carbon footprint, but a lot of it is internal. So some of the things we do is we analyze different operational centers for their energy intensity and what kind of investments can we make to reduce those. And what you'll see is that there's a guns or butter kind of analysis for everything. So we tell a factory that's in a part of the country where there's coal power, we'd like to see them adopt solar. And the answer is, yeah, you know, we want a new paint booth. And so what we've done is we've made a couple of organization changes, and we budget a certain amount every year to go towards those products and look at the most carbon de-intensifying investment. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that we work on. There's also we're studying a carbon tax internally to cause different groups to understand the costs to society, perhaps, of what they're doing or the products. So if you look at some of our products, which aren't as fuel efficient as some of the others, so you have a Fit and you have an Odyssey or a Pilot, which, of course, are all wonderful cars, but how many Fits would you have to sell when the market doesn't want as many Fits to make up for one of the larger cars? So internally, we're looking at applying different kinds of...
So you're going to have a Honda cap and trade scheme going on?
We might have to do that to realize that. Well, we're studying it, and a lot of other companies have done that. Microsoft does that. Other companies have done that. And we brought it up a couple of times. We have a North American Environmental Committee, and we're looking at ways, at the very least, to raise people's awareness, because right now it's not on the radar. When you're developing a product, you've got cost targets, you've got safety targets, you've got weight targets, you've got feature targets, you've got price targets, all of these things, but there isn't really the carbon target. There's a fuel economy target, which is sort of a proxy for it, but not really, because the federal government has all kinds of greenhouse gas requirements, and that's based on the roll-up of the whole fleet. So we need to balance what we're creating or to understand where we could perhaps invest a little more to reduce that in some products, because otherwise there might be a tax or a penalty on the development team where there wouldn't be.
But Stephen, in terms of the market, don't you think you have to have a consumer penalty of some sort? I mean, you're going to go back to the diesel example in Europe, huge a tax subsidy for diesel in Europe just to get the consumer involved. When you guys want to go two-thirds electric in 13 years.
Globally.
Yeah, in the last, we've been a hybridized battery society for 17 years now, essentially, and they are 3%, less than 3% of the U.S. market. And that's very ambitious on your part. How do you possibly get there without taxing the consumer?
Well, in a sense, the market has to pay for everything, ideally. My background's actually in economics. So there has to be market demand for everything that you do. In our case, we're a business. So we can't afford to print money, can't afford to lose money. What we need to do is to get scale, do a lot of R&D, and bring those costs down so that there isn't the tax, so to speak, or the penalty on the consumer, and provide the product that delivers the features that they want. So it's a huge challenge. But when you look at some of the concerns in society, and we're a company that believes climate change is an issue and that it needs to be addressed. And if you consider this, so the Wall Street guys are asking those questions. Years ago, I used to go around and do the roadshow, and the fund managers that all own the company and make the investments started asking, what are you guys doing about CO2? This is going back maybe 10 years ago, and I'd scratch my head, and I'm thinking, where is that question coming from? And I asked one of them after a meeting, and the guy looks at me and says, oh, you don't get it. He goes, you're tobacco.
Oh, yeah.
The next tobacco.
And we consider that to be a true business risk. So we're working very hard not to be part of the problem and to be part of the solution. So, again, it's R&D, and it's creating products that people want on their own merit that don't create the
But Henry makes a great point. I mean, the number of people buying green cars, if you will, is shrinking. It's shrinking in sales numbers. It's shrinking in market share. Now, within that group, yeah, plug-ins are going up, hybrids are going down, electrics are actually going up too, but as a group, it's not increasing.
Right, so we have to provide products that give those benefits without the penalty. and it's an R&D challenge. Like I said before, what's wrong with an Accord that gets 49 miles per gallon if it's priced right? Mm-hmm. So with scale,
right,
comes the pricing.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, you could make the argument that basically, I mean, you guys, because I was looking at the Earth Dreams technology that, mm-hmm, that had been announced, you know, out of Japan. I mean, so this is a corporate initiative to have, you know, much more fuel efficient engines and transmissions. And I was thinking, oh, this is maybe where they were doing work on hydrogen. No, this is just purely the internal combustion engine part of it.
Everything. Yeah.
So basically the regular Accords and the regular Civics that are being sold out there in vast numbers are themselves green vehicles. Without
in that sense, we have a chart that just shows today and then going out, let's say 30 or 40 years, and it's just kind of a growth curve for volume. If this is 100% of what we sell today, it's just about all internal combustion, and 30 years from now, it's zero pure internal combustion. Not that many hybrids, but more things like plug-ins, electric, and fuel cells.
Yeah.
So it's really a big transition. And for a company that's an engine company, there's a lot of mental adjustments that people have to make to get their heads wrapped around.
Well,
that.
A fuel cell, yeah, kind of a motor, I suppose.
Well, you know, it's a different skill set, and you also have different people joining the organization. You know, you have people that grew up with computers and a whole different mindset about things and electrification. So, again, R&D, R&D, R&D.
Yeah, but I mean, again, to get back to the competitive set, you guys make really good gas engine powered things, and you've hit. I mean, you guys make a lot of money in this market. I mean, I think 40% of your product globally is sold here. You guys get the American consumer. Unlike those Wall Street guys, yeah, the American consumer, if you ask them where global warming ranks on their list of priorities, it's down here.
As long as they don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
But when their ankles are wet, they may start to care, but then it's too late.
Yeah. But you make very good CRVs. You guys have hit the sweet spot of the SUV market. Why not an SUV here?
I'd say no.
Doctor, start somewhere, right?
Okay. I want Dr. Data to get out his sedan sales here.
Yeah, well, this, you know, back after in 08, when the economy crashed, there was a lot of discussion about, oh, what's going to be? Woe is us. Are we going to have a lost decade like Japan? And there were a lot of products getting canceled and a lot of new products being considered. And I remember sitting in a room and I turned to my boss at the time, and he's the head of global product. I said, you know, I think we're going to get back to business as usual here pretty soon because we want what we want. And that's part of the American psyche. So Americans want SUVs. It's form factor.
It's American.
It's lifestyle.
This is a global shift.
Well, some of it is for, you know, it started with minivans, really, and station wagons. So it goes way back. It's the functionality of the car. And some of it's bling and that gangsta factor and other things like that. But people want this form factor. And we'll have the kind of powertrains that those vehicles need to have to be pleasing, but also to be environmentally sensitive. So I didn't say no.
So why do so few companies offer fuel cells right now?
I think they don't have the technology or the vision. It's a lot easier not to do your sit-ups. But if you have a good, strong core, you're going to be healthier and you're going to enjoy things more.
You've co-developed this with GM, and is there some GM?
Nothing. In this product, no. But we've had a joint R&D project with GM since 2011. And what we did was we took the two companies that had the most patents between of all the automakers on automotive fuel cell technology and threw everything in. And then developed a next generation fuel cell stack. So it's next from this. Hmm. Roughly the same size, but drive the cost out. And remember, I said R&D, R&D, R&D. And we announced a couple weeks ago here in Detroit the announcement of a joint manufacturing company to build those fuel cells. And GM and Honda will share in the supply from that factory. So that's why I say
2020 is when that factory is going to begin putting products
right.
out.
Right here, right here in Brownstown. So
are they going to export fuel cells to Japan to build Clarities? Or are you guys going to start building Clarities in America?
Well, you know, we build most of what we sell here anyway. So part of the reason this car is made in Japan is because the technology is coming from Japan. And I think we'll have this much under our belt, and the powertrain will be more matured, and it's possible, especially if the volume's up. The factories here are all, we're building about 2 million vehicles a year in North America, and maybe 1.5 million, 1.6 million sold in the U.S. So those factories are running at a pretty fast clip, making 400,000 CRVs a year.
Hey, look, we're going to have to cut you loose. I know you got a flight to catch here. But Steve Senner, thanks so much for coming on, especially bringing a Clarity in the studio with us. This is awesome.
You're welcome. Thanks. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to take a real quick break right now, give a shout-out to our friends at Lear. We'll be back to talk about a little bit more.
Lear Kinexus offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts. All delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, we're back. And so what do you guys think? You know, I've heard talk of us evolving into the hydrogen economy. Is this it? Are we there? Is this the beginning?
Yeah, I just think the competitive set is really tough, as it always has been for hydrogen. I mean, hydrogen, all these alternatives are great, battery and natural gas, but the ICE is a really tough competitor. And, I mean, you know, Steve's an environmental guy, but on the politics side, you know, I've covered the global warming beat for 30 years, and increasingly scientists say it is not a crisis. It's something we can manage, and I think you see that in the current political climate. You see it in public opinion polls. I don't think you have this clamor to reduce CO2 among the public, which I think is required.
Well, amongst the American public,
yes. That's right,
wasn't there the Paris Accords that people signed onto, like globally?
Yeah, but again, look at Europe. Europe 20 years ago wanted to ban genetically altered crops, which would have been suicide. I mean, that's how you feed the world, is with genetically altered crops. So the rest of the world did not follow Europe down that path. And as a result...
It's a little apples hydrogen there, Henry.
No, but so. The United States feeds the world.
Right.
And by the same... I'm just saying, in the political environment, I think the only way you go to a hydrogen or a battery, which are higher cost alternatives, is tax. You've got to bring the consumer into this.
And so you're calling for a carbon tax.
Yeah, and the consumer won't—they won't buy it. They won't have that. That is political suicide.
Okay, I would make the argument basically that if you look at it from a pure market thing, that the petrochemicals are a finite fuel. I mean, we're going to run out at some point, right? Yeah. Hydrogen is the most abundant. Most abundant element in the universe. It's everywhere. Rocks.
You need energy to get it.
It doesn't exist alone.
Right. You have to do that. But it just seems to me that, you know, we've had 120 years of internal combustion engine, and so we've basically created this mindset of that's what cars are, right? So now we to use another analogy, which is perhaps like your crops, which are a little fuzzy, but so since 19...
Another environmental scare story. That
No. I'm saying, okay, when NASA picked a fuel, what did they pick? Hydrogen,
yeah.
Right? Liquid hydrogen.
Yeah.
Depends on the application.
If you're in a space station right now, rolling around, and you want water to drink, where does that water come from?
From the hydrogen fuel cell.
Exactly.
And recycling. I mean, they're even drinking their own sweat.
Right, I didn't want to go down that road.
And I'm just being polite mentioning sweat.
Yes. So the point is that if we had started with hydrogen, we'd say,
But we didn't.
Right. So as we advance, I mean, it seems to me that this is a sufficiently compelling car in and of itself that as these guys get more production knowledge, as they productionize the fuel cell more and more and more, okay, it becomes highly competitive to anything else. But if I'm Shell Oil, I'm looking at this from the point of view of, you know what? I want to make money now, and I want to make money in the future. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'm going to put my bet on that.
But this is, the climate change crisis isn't there. You talk to the scientists, it's not there.
On what scientists you talk to, we can politely disagree on that.
I talk to the top guys, and it's not there. But the reason governments like it is because they can control everything. Everything produces carbon. The problem with hydrogen is in order to separate it from water, it's enormously energy intensive. If you're in California, how do you get it? Natural gas. It ain't going to come from windmills. I mean, this is high energy stuff. So, you know, to my point about diesel, at what point does the government say, well, we don't like hydrogen because it produces too much carbon over here? Everything produces carbon, even hydrogen. And so, you know, is hydrogen just the trend of the day?
I don't think so, because
hydrogen produces carbon.
Because you got to separate it from water. I mean,
hydrogen in of itself is
yeah, no, but it's the, what Henry's talking about is the energy that you need to either reformulate it from natural gas or to use electrolysis.
Right.
Energy intensive in both cases. However, having said that,
but if we use nukes,
well, you know, nukes are another way.
Greens don't like nukes either.
Well,
but you know what?
Greens are nihilists. They don't like anything.
For solar and for wind, what's, you know, they only operate at certain times, and to store it in batteries, very expensive, and you got problems with it. So, you know, the argument is use that electricity to make hydrogen, because as Steve just mentioned, you can store it for 100 years. You come back 100 years and it's still good to go. So that could actually be an enabler for solar and wind and other renewables.
Right. But again, I mean, I came to this town in 2003. First auto show I went to was the GM's hydrogen car. What was it? The
Equinox. Oh no, you're talking about the skateboard, as they call it, the autonomy.
Yeah, this is going to happen in 5 years. I mean, you know, hydrogen is always
Always been a lot of hype.
Right.
But I mean, we've all driven this car. This is a terrific car.
Right.
I mean, I really like it.
It is.
And I like the battery electrics, too. That's what I wonder is, okay, California's putting in refueling stations. They're probably going to make it work. Steve talked about the Northeast being more difficult. My question always is, what about Topeka? What about Peoria?
Right.
Because if hydrogen cars are only going to be used in certain areas where the governments will liberally fund them, if they don't sell in Topeka and Peoria, they're going to be very small. They'll never get the scale that they need. They'll never get the cost reduction that they need. I mean, how much money is Honda losing on this car? Buckets full.
A lot.
Lots of it. You know, but I understand, as Steve said, you got to start someplace. Mm-hmm.
But I think that's an important point. I mean, again, this is dependent on government. I mean, the government is funding all of those. It's now 26. It's supposed to be 100 stations here by 2020 in California. That's entirely dependent on government budgets. Governments are fickle. Publics are fickle. I mean, what you want is, I'll use another analogy for you. You want a cell phone analogy. Everybody said there's no way the cell phone companies would get off the ground because the bells were too powerful. Didn't matter. I mean, as soon as you had public demand for cell phones, the infrastructure exploded. It's all private. It's all private. Billions of dollars in infrastructure. That's what you need. You need the public
Do you think a Shell, for example, because Shell's very bullish on hydrogen,
right,
do you think they'd go and put the stations in?
Sure.
But it's a chicken and the egg, right?
Well,
you got to have a car.
Okay, but if we were to look at a map,
Shell's not going to put them in unless they're
if there's demand for it. But I mean, okay, but sort of to your point, okay, if you look at a map where ethanol stations are located, right? And you're going to find them in corn country. I mean, you're going to look at this map and they're going to be dotted all over the place, right? Because they have the availability of that stuff. Now, let's say that you begin to have these reformers that can create hydrogen that you know, General Motors had been working on in upstate New York. I mean, before they decided that their future lay with the Volt, they were developing hydrogen vehicles. We all drove them. I remember driving an S10 pickup that basically had the entire bed was full of a chemical plant, right, to drive around to reform the stuff into hydrogen. But as you begin to develop those things, and you're able to locate them in Topeka, so suddenly getting hydrogen is not such a big deal anymore. I mean, it used to be, I mean, these guys at General Motors are even saying you could take aftershave, pour it in one of these things, and voila, you have hydrogen as a result of it. So if I'm Shell, if I'm Chevron, if I'm BP, you know, I look at this and say, okay, this is another opportunity. It's supplemental. It isn't a replacement. So I think, Henry, that it's not going to be a case where, you know, in 20 years from now, we're all going to be driving around in hydrogen cars. But I think what's going to happen is we're going to go from being a monoculture in this industry, meaning we're all driving cars with internal combustion engines, that we're going to be driving, you know, Teslas and Bolts, we're going to be driving Clarities,
but,
and we're going to be driving...
But is that sustainable in the sense that here's an industry that's already under pressure because Wall Street doesn't like the margins it makes, and it's all about scale. And now you're going to slice it up. So I don't have quite the scale I did in piston engines. I don't have quite the scale in electrics.
That's
I don't have
point.
The scale... That's what I'm just questioning. Is that a sustainable model?
Sure. If you're a company like Honda or a company like Toyota or a company like Hyundai that's basically saying, you know what, we've got to get ahead of this game, we've got to learn how to productionize this stuff, and we've got to learn how to make profit out of doing that, right? Rather than just saying, okay, we're going to make more cars with, you know, four-cylinder engines, and we'll downsize and turbocharge these things, and we're going to go forward to the future doing that. Because there are going to be other, as we talked many times in the show, that with car sharing, with people becoming disinterested in cars, you know, what's going to happen to
scale with that. Yeah.
Right.
No, exactly right.
But 15 years ago, 17 years ago, you have the Insight and the Prius.
Right.
The only two hybrid cars on the market.
Mm-hmm.
Today there are, I don't know, 75, 80? I mean, there are dozens.
That sounds high to me, but dozens.
There's lots.
There's been 50 in the last 5 years
right.
introduced. Dozens of choices. The market share today is declining. I mean, and so in 2000, who of us would have predicted gasoline would be $2.20 a gallon, that fracking would have discovered untold reserves of oil, and that the American public would be driving less than 3% of hybrids? None of us would have predicted that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's I think that's equally daunting.
You know, with electrics, you know, we are reaching, I think, possibly a tipping point. You know, the studies would suggest that around 2022. A battery electric will cost the same as a piston engine car, and that's when we could really start to see things ramp up. So even though I'm one of the ones out there pointing out, hey, look, you know, it's green cars are a shrinking segment, I don't necessarily believe that's going to be the case forever and ever.
Yeah.
And as you guys know, driving electrics is really good. They're so quiet. I really do like that. They have instant torque. You know, you see an opening in traffic, just tap the accelerator, boom, you're right there. So it's a different driving experience and in many cases, a better driving experience. And I think people will gravitate towards that once they experience it.
Right.
But you can't pay a premium and you can't count on government subsidizing it for it to really catch on. It's got to be able to haul its own weight, so
right.
to speak.
Yeah, the consumer has to have it. And again, I was stunned because I haven't spent much time with Honda Accord hybrids. You know, the numbers on this are impressive for a hydrogen car. Go to an Accord, half the price of this, same interior space.
Mm-hmm.
Hybrid Accord, 750-mile range on the thing,
mm-hmm.
for half the fuel price of this. I mean, again, companies...
I don't think that's right anymore. I think the fuel price is the same.
No, what we were paying, where we filled up in California was...
It was $15 a kilogram.
That's right.
$14.67
right.
or whatever
90,
it was.
That's $90 for
right,
a fill.
Right, right. But... one of the hydrogen companies just announced in California it's dropping the price to $10. Henry said even a little, I think it's like $9.99
yeah.
a kilo.
The government subsidized?
No, this is not. I don't believe that this is the Joel Lewanick company.
Right, mm-hmm. First Energy. And part of it is demand. Okay, you're going to have less. But, you know, I mean, one of the things we have to think about here, Henry, is that if we were to go back to the early Honda hybrids, they sure as hell were nothing like you know, the full-size Accord that is providing that, right? So here we are at the beginning. So we got to keep that in mind. The other thing that you got to keep in mind is, as you're looking at the declining sales of hybrid and other green vehicles, that there are still some companies that are winners in this regard. And so this is my favorite number, which you've heard probably too many times. You're going to beat me to death if I keep saying this.
Let's hear it.
So if you look at Prius sales last year, 136,000 Priuses were sold in the United States, and their number was down.
Right.
Okay, 85,000 Buick cars were sold. So who's winning there? 85,000
Buick
cars, okay. Not including the trucks, right?
Right, right.
So Prius, Buick, okay?
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good delta there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think who's happier?
Yeah.
The guys at Toyota or the guys at Buick?
But again, that's another, you know, that's another data point, which should be disturbing to battery folks, is the Prius is like 50, continues to be 50% of those hybrid sales. One model is about half the sales. That brilliant Honda Accord hybrid we've been talking about, it's 8% of Honda's California sales. I mean, this is the greenest, most religious,
you know,
state in the union, and only 8% of Accord
very,
sales are hybrid.
What I find fascinating is I saw a television ad for the new Hyundai Ioniq hybrid. Not the Ioniq.
The Niro.
The Niro. Thank you.
The Kia Niro.
Never mentions it's a hybrid. I think that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. All it does is go, hey, look at this, 42 miles to the gallon or whatever the number is. They never mention it's a hybrid. I personally believe the general public doesn't want a hybrid. Don't want it.
It's actually
and
a market.
So I
negative.
Think Hyundai's awakened to this fact and is saying, hey, the Niro, it's cool. But don't talk about it being a hybrid.
Although,
because I believe the public doesn't want hybrids.
No, I think think about, so Chrysler or FCA, US LLC, did research before announcing the plug-in Pacifica, remember? And they said they would not describe it as being a plug-in because that turned people off.
Right.
So it is a hybrid, but it isn't a plug-in thing. I'm sure we've all had this situation that you bring home, a press car that is a hybrid and your neighbor comes over and says, where do you plug it in? It's just like, well, no, you don't. You just go to the gas station, put gas. No, but where's the plug?
Yeah.
You know, and this is pre-plug-in hybrids, right?
Yeah, but I think it's more than that. I think if you ask the general public, are you in favor of the environment? Yeah. And do you think cars should be cleaner? Yeah. Would you pay more for them? Yeah. And do you want a hybrid? No.
They won't pay more for them. They won't pay more for them.
No, they will not. But what they say in the polls, they say they will. But you're right. When they go in the showroom, no, they want the premium sound system and the heated seats, you know.
Yeah.
But I also believe that people don't want to be perceived, the general public I'm talking about now, as environmentalist tree huggers. And so I think they'd like to say, you know, my
Kia Niro.
Hyundai, yeah, Kia Niro, thank you, Gary, gets 42 miles to the gallon. But I think that Kia Smart saying, don't call it a hybrid.
Well, you know, I think you could just weld the hood shut on every car and somebody going and buy one, they'd have no idea. You got a 4-cylinder, 6-cylinder, 8-cylinder, 12, nobody knows, right? Yeah. I mean, who changes their oil?
I mean, that's why Chrysler wants to double up with somebody, because they just make the same powertrain, please, and call it something.
Yeah, it's just because it goes to the sound system, it goes to the heated seats, it goes to the reclining, it goes to the leather, blah, 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 right? I mean, That's what it really comes down to.
Yeah. But I mean, the bottom line for the customer is price and utility, and both of those are enemies of hydrogen and alternative fuels. I think your Prius number. One reason Prius sales are down is not just gas prices, but because California took away their
HOV
sticker. You know, I mean, it's that sort of thing that consumer choices rest on. And if you're going to offer a hydrogen car that's $10,000 more expensive than the gas version, ain't going to happen.
I think what Steve was saying about, you know, these alpha buyers, these are the same people who are buying Teslas, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they want that because it's cool. It's got that, you know, it still has that factor, right?
They're rich.
And And they're rich, right? Well, rich people buy cars, too. I mean, you know, I mean, they're, and so, you know, I'm sure that, that rich people will say, you know, oh, you got a Tesla? I got a fuel cell car.
Right.
Right? You know,
right.
I mean, it's just like, so.
And in the short term, that's what Honda wants. This is a compliance vehicle in the short term. They got big regulatory numbers to meet from the state of California. They got to sell, you know, 15% of their sales have to be zero emission by 2025. And this thing,
couldn't
fuel cell is going to get
though,
big credits.
That Honda may be one of the companies that doesn't need to worry so much about a compliance vehicle?
I think they're going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, they are out there. This promise of two-thirds of vehicles being electrified by 2030, I mean, that's just around the corner in terms of product cycles.
Yes, it is.
That's a huge commitment. So it's a great company to watch because we know how good their engineering is.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Hey, look, guys, we're going to have to wrap it up. We're at the end of our time here. But, Henry, thanks for stopping by.
It's John,
always
Gary,
good to have you here, Gary.
And you guys.
Yeah. Let's do it again, Gary.
All right.
Cool. Okay, I want to thank all of you for having tuned in.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.